The Red Bull Air Race Series cancels Budapest. Fifi remains frustrated. And NTSB says airline pilots don't get enough training or information on handling winds. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this Aerocast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, July 15th, 2010. The Red Bull Air Race Series has just seen its already short season get even shorter. Just a week after announcing the tour would drop its stop in Portugal, when protracted negotiations with potential host cities couldn't be completed in enough time to plan a quality event. The Red Bull Air Race in Budapest has now been canceled over what the organization says have been lengthy delays in the permissions process. This season's Red Bull Air Race World Champion will now be crowned after the final race of the 2010 season at Euro Speedway in Germany, August 7th and 8th. Budapest has been an annual fixture on the Red Bull Air Race World Championship calendar since 2004, with crowds of more than 600,000 spectators watching the racing from the banks of the Danube River. This year's race was set for August 19th and 20th. Red Bull Air Race CEO Bernd Leudel expressed disappointment over the Budapest cancellation and said he hopes the city will be back on the calendar next year. He says the 2011 calendar will be announced after the final round in Germany next month. He says next year's schedule will include a return to New York after the historic first race there in June. The Commemorative Air Force has been frustrated again in its attempt to fly Fifi, the last remaining flying example of a B-29 Superfortress. The CAF had planned to fly the re-engined World War II bomber on Monday, but KOSA-TV reports the FAA has determined that the test flight crews must be limited to 4, and the CAF has always flown with a crew of 6, a number mandated by the FAA for the past 30-plus years. CAF is currently refusing to fly the test missions with only 4 on board. The restoration of the plane, including new, more reliable engines, cost $1.5 million. Those who came out to see the flight were given free tours of the plane, including its cockpit. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board is out with a probable cause finding in the 2008 case of Continental Airlines Flight 1404, which ran off the left side of 34 right while landing at Denver International Airport and caught fire. All 110 passengers and 5 crew members evacuated, but the captain and 5 passengers were seriously injured. The board says the plane encountered strong and gusty crosswinds that exceeded the captain's training and experience. Contributing factors named included the air traffic control system, which did not require or facilitate the dissemination of key available wind information to controllers and pilots, and inadequate crosswind training in the airline industry due to deficient simulator wind gust modeling. But the primary cause, says NTSB, the pilot just didn't stay on the rudder. The board has issued 14 recommendations to the FAA regarding mountain waves, wind dissemination to flight crews, runway selection, pilot training for crosswind takeoffs, and crashworthiness. Up next on ANN, a regional biofuels initiative is underway in the Northwest. Virginia pilots are threatened by a new wind farm. And flying zebra to cross Atlantic. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800- for Cessna.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for July 15th. I'm Paul Platt. A group of industry partners in the Pacific Northwest is researching the feasibility of sourcing biofuels within the region, which could be used to fly airliners. Alaska Airlines, Boeing, Washington State University, and the international airports at Portland, Seattle-Tacoma, and Spokane kicked off the strategic initiative on Monday. Sustainable Aviation Fuels Northwest is the first regional assessment of its kind in the U.S. The comprehensive assessment will examine biomass production and harvest, refining, transport infrastructure, and actual use by airlines. It will include an analysis of potential biomass sources that are indigenous to the Pacific Northwest. It's jointly funded by the participating parties and expected to be complete in about 6 months. Alaska Air Group Chairman and CEO Bill Ayer explains, quote, "By transitioning to a more fuel-efficient fleet and adopting technology to follow more direct flight paths, Alaska Airlines has made significant strides in minimizing the environmental impact of our flying in the communities we serve. Through this initiative, we are joining other key stakeholders in our region to explore the development of alternatives to jet fuel that could further reduce our carbon footprint," unquote. Get more details on the project in the text version of this story, dated July 14th, at aero-news.net. A wind farm with 15 to 18 turbines has been proposed near Roanoke Regional Airport in Western Virginia, and its proposed placement has pilots alarmed. A company called Invenergy applied to the FAA for a hazard determination to see if it could build windmills on top of Poor Mountain, where there are already a number of radio and other communication towers. But the wind turbines would be over 440 feet tall, about twice as tall as any existing tower on the mountain. Matthew Broden, an aviation lawyer and president of the IFR Pilots Club in Roanoke, said the turbines would create a hazard to navigation. Aircraft on IFR approaches to Roanoke usually use an approach to runway 6, which would take them too close to the proposed turbines, which would be roughly the same color as the clouds. Flight instructor and Pilots Club member Gordon Ewald told the paper, "The wind turbines aren't the problem. It's where they want to put them. I certainly want wind turbines, but not sticking into the airspace pilots have to occupy when the weather is most challenging," unquote. The FAA's review of Invenergy's request is expected to take several months. Bombardier says it has successfully built the first all-composite manufacturing validation unit for the Learjet 85's pressure fuselage section. The unit was built in Montreal, where the Learjet 85 aircraft structural design team is located, using actual production tooling and with strong support from the program team based in Mexico. This unit will be used to validate the design concepts, manufacturing processes, and quality as the program advances toward the beginning of production, scheduled for late this year. The 45,000 pounds of production tooling will soon be transferred to its permanent home, the new Learjet 85 aircraft facility in Querétaro, Mexico, where a second manufacturing validation unit will be built. Bombardier says the Learjet 85 is on schedule for entry into service in 2013. The Sikorsky S-38, also known variously as the Flying Zebra or the Flying Yacht, is 82 years old, still going strong, and about to embark on a long journey across the Atlantic Ocean. On August 21st, she'll take off from Minneapolis and fly over Canada, Greenland, Iceland, Scotland, England, all the way to Frankfurt, Berlin, and Hamburg, raising money for the charity Wings of Hope. The event is being coordinated in the UK by Aviation Without Borders in close cooperation with its sister organization in Germany, Wings of Help. Millions of moviegoers got to see the S-38 in action in the 2004 film The Aviator, in which Howard Hughes, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, flew her over Los Angeles and landed by the seashore. The amphibian aircraft has explored and surveyed many of the world's continents and oceans. Still ahead, Boeing's new UAV flies at 65,000 feet. Pentagon to Congress, enough with the C-17s. And here's a dirty job even Mike Rowe won't take. You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin WAS GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, July 15th. I'm Paul Plack. UAVs, which can loiter for long periods at high altitudes, are not new. But Boeing's Phantom-I is raising the bar. The company has a demonstrator it expects to fly for up to 4 days at a time, at 150 knots, at 65,000 feet. The craft uses a pair of 2.3-liter four-cylinder piston engines running on hydrogen. It has a 150-foot wingspan. Darryl Davis, president of Boeing Phantom Works, said at the unveiling ceremony in St. Louis that the demonstrator, quote, defines our rapid prototyping efforts and will demonstrate the art of the possible when it comes to persistent intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, unquote. Later this summer, Phantom I will be shipped to NASA's Dryden Flight Research Center at Edwards Air Force Base in California to begin a series of ground and taxi tests in preparation for its first flight in early 2011. That debut flight is expected to last between 4 and 8 hours. Because of the hydrogen power, the only emission from the engines is water vapor. U.S. Defense Department officials made the case again this week to Congress that the military has more than enough large transport planes and that any more C-17s ordered by lawmakers will simply force existing planes into retirement before their time. Mike McCord, Principal Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, commented, quote, money spent on things we don't need takes away from those we do need, unquote. McCord was joined by Air Force Major General Susan Desjardins, the Director of Strategic Plans for Air Mobility Command, and by Alan Estevez, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Logistical and Materiel Readiness. They repeated Defense Secretary Robert Gates's position against the purchase of more C-17s to the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs Federal Financial Management Subcommittee. The officials noted that new aircraft purchases always trigger additional costs in training, maintenance, and infrastructure, such as new hangars, bases, and tooling. Estevez quipped, it's the gift that keeps on giving, because if you give it to us, we'll maintain it, unquote. The Pentagon wants instead to modify the C-5M for extended life to continue to work in conjunction with the C-17. It's not clear whether lawmakers, who want to keep feeding defense contractors in their home districts, are listening to any of this. In each of the last 2 years, Congress has heard the same pitch and bought more C-17s anyway. This year, President Obama has vowed to veto any spending bill that funds more excess C-17s, but he has sometimes caved on such threats in the past. And finally, we're in a down economy, but that doesn't mean there are no jobs available. One of the hottest fields going right now is lobbying. If you follow aerospace news, you're probably aware that Pratt & Whitney has the contract to provide engines for the F-35 Lightning II fighter, and that GE and Rolls-Royce have collaborated on an alternative engine, which the Defense Department so far has shunned as unnecessary. But on several occasions, Congress has approved continued funding for the alternative engine's development, on the premise that competition will help hold down costs, and that dual sourcing avoids risks of grounding the entire fleet if a problem emerges with the Pratt & Whitney engine. Especially during the administration of a guy who ran on a promise to end waste in government procurement, how do redundant programs, not to mention unneeded C-17s, keep getting funded? The Connecticut Monitor reports that between them, Pratt & Whitney and GE and Rolls-Royce now have 33 lobbyists working Congress. As of the end of the first quarter, Pratt & Whitney's parent company, United Technologies Corp., was spending $1 million a month on lobbying. The Center for Responsive Politics reports UTC's Political Action Committee has already made campaign contributions of $500,000 to lawmakers, including nearly every member of the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, as well as key members of the House Armed Services Committee, and has hit the allowable limit of $10,000 in donations to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. On the other side, GE has donated more than $900,000 to most of the same people. The Mirror reports GE's lobbyists include a former congressman and 5 former congressional staffers, some of whom used to work with the committees which will decide the alternative engine issue. So, if you're underemployed but have good connections, especially established relationships inside the sausage factory, you could be ready for a career in lobbying. Your talents are in demand, so don't be afraid to ask for what you want going in the door. Hey, maybe you'll have the clout to negotiate a place to take a shower before you leave work every day. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, ANN's Jim Campbell asks Cirrus CEO Brent Wouters about the rumor that Cirrus is going to China. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.